Hello and welcome to the reading of the Sioux City Journal for Wednesday, July 22nd, 2020. I am your reader, Ike Rayford, and we will start with our weather. Today we have a high of 81 and a low of 67. Tonight, partly cloudy with thunderstorms late. On Thursday, a couple of showers and a thunderstorm. A wind is out of the south-southeast, 8 to 16 miles per hour for a high of 86 and a low of 73. On Friday, we have a high of 91 with a low of 74, a thunderstorm in spots in the mornings. Winds are out of the south, 10 to 20 miles per hour. And on Saturday, mostly sunny, breezy, and humid. Winds out of the south at 10 to 20 miles per hour, but a high of 93 and a low of 74. And rounding out the week, Sunday, warm and humid with clouds and sun, and a high of 92 and a low of 70 with the winds out of the south-southwest at 8 to 16 miles per hour. Our mini editorial today comes from John Polifica of Mapleton, Iowa, and he says that George Will and Dana Milbank's tag team match against President Trump in Sunday's Journal opinion section was as entertaining as it was enlightening. Also, it speaks volumes when credible spokespersons of the conservative movement, such as George Will, seek to distance themselves from the toxic persona of Donald Trump. And again, that is from John Polifica, Mapleton, Iowa. Couple of stories on our front page this morning. Sioux City teen questions police response to emergency call. There's a picture of Kennedy Valladolid, and that's spelled Valladolid. Shows what happened when she and her father witnessed a woman screaming and running away from a man near their Sioux City home. She said she reported the domestic assault to police after they took her to safety at roughly 8:30 p.m., but that it took until about 12:30 a.m. for a police officer to respond to the victim's residence. And this is from Dolly A. Butts of the Sioux City Journal. Kennedy, Valladolid, lies awake at night wondering if the brown-haired woman she saw running down a Morningside street frantically screaming for help in late June is okay. The woman, in her 30s, was being chased by a boyfriend. Then Valladolid's thoughts shifted to the unknown number of other women in the community who are living in fear of an intimate partner. I, an 18-year-old female, called 911 to help another female who was fearing for her life, and no one came. This struck fear in me when I thought, what if this was me or someone close to me? The 2020 Sioux City North High School graduate told the city council during its July 6 meeting. Valladolid said it took police nearly 4 hours to respond to the incident. By the time, she said, the woman had already returned to the home that she shares with the man who assaulted her. Valladolid thinks officers missed an opportunity to help the woman get out of a dangerous situation. As a result of Valladolid's complaint, the police department launched an investigation to determine why it took so long for an officer to respond. In a statement provided to the journal, the department said the investigation revealed that the incident was not a domestic situation and the victim denied being assaulted at all. The department noted that the incident was reported close to shift change and that the Woodbury County Communication Center was receiving a very heavy call volume at the time. The district officer was also tied up taking a domestic abuse related restraining order violation at another location, according to the statement. To imply that we do not care about the victims of abuse or any other crimes is simply not the case, Chief Rex Mueller said in the statement. The fact that there was no longer an active disturbance, the suspect had left the scene, and the city was dealing with a very heavy call volume all created the unfortunate situation that led to delays in police response. Violent incidents. Safe Place, a nonprofit that provides safety, advocacy, and support to survivors of domestic violence, has seen an uptick in people seeking protection orders as Sioux City and the surrounding region reopened amid the COVID-19 pandemic. According to Executive Director Robin McGinty, she also said more violent incidents have been occurring in the city lately. On July 6, police arrested Christopher Moyle of Mapleton, Iowa after he had texted his wife a picture of her car parked outside of the Woodbury County Courthouse where she was getting a protection order against him and threatened to shoot her. According to court documents, officers searching Moyle's car found a severed deer head, a rifle holding 22 live rounds, two magazines full of ammunition, and a homemade bomb containing gunpowder, wood nails, BBs, and shotgun pellets. Moyle has been charged with possession of an incendiary or explosive device, domestic abuse assault, first-degree harassment, and eluding. We've just been very busy downtown between police reports and people seeking relief through the court system, we have not seen as many people seeking shelter, but we have had some, and we've had them in hotels, McGinty said. We've seen a huge increase in people asking for rental assistance so they can move out and get their own place. There's a big need there. When the pandemic first began, McGinty said advocates didn't see many survivors reaching out for help, which she said was scary. According to statistics provided by Sioux City Police, 134 domestic assaults were recorded from March through June, a decrease of 5.6% compared to the same time period a year ago when 142 domestic assaults were logged. McGinty said that the financial issues people are facing due to furloughs and layoffs are making it even more difficult for them to leave an abusive relationship. Although domestic violence can happen to anyone, about 80% of survivors' safe place services are women. The majority of them are mothers between the ages of 18 and 34. Maybe they lost their job because of the pandemic, or maybe their partner is the one who has the job or carries the insurance. They're thinking, now is not the time for me to try to break away from this, she said. It's okay that they kind of hunkered down for a while and stayed in that situation, but it is okay to reach out and get help. It doesn't mean that you have to leave right away. Just do what's best for you and your family. The evening of June 29, Valladolid was talking with her family as they sat at a table on their deck in the 2600 block of Peters Avenue. Around 8:30 p.m., Valladolid said she saw a woman being chased by a man on foot. The woman, who was headed northbound on South Lynn Street, darted toward a grassy incline on Peters Avenue and collapsed by a power pole. Her body was like super weak. She was running like someone who was running from a bear or an animal that they thought was going to kill them, Valladolid recalled. Valladolid rushed down the concrete steps in front of her home to render aid to the woman, who was in tears. Valladolid said in the woman's ankles were swollen and bleeding. The woman's boyfriend noticed Valladolid's father, Adam, and retreated to his dark gray pickup truck. He yelled at the woman to get back in the vehicle, but then sped off. Valladolid's father informed him that the police had been called. According to the statement from the police department, when Valladolid first requested officers come to Peters Avenue and South Lynn Street at 9:15 p.m., a third party was heard crying in the background. Valladolid reported that the suspect vehicle was leaving the area and provided a plate number. The statement said the victim was asked if she needed medical assistance, but declined it. At the conclusion of the call, the dispatcher stated that an officer would be sent. Valladolid and her father helped the woman over to their steps and gave her some water and tissues. Valladolid consoled her for nearly 2 hours. She learned that the woman had injured her ankle when her longtime boyfriend stepped on the gas as she was trying to exit the truck. I was just trying to talk to her and calm her down and try to kind of understand what happened, thinking I would only have to do it for a little while, then the cops would be there, Valladolid said. The statement said an unknown male party spoke with the dispatcher at 10:05 p.m. and provided Valladolid's address. He talked about a dude circling the block for the last hour and said her brother is just gonna take her to the police station. You guys are taking far too long. At 10:15 p.m., Valladolid said the woman called a family member to come pick her up, but before she could make it from the steps to her family member's car, Valladolid said the woman, who was concerned about her possessions, decided to walk to her home instead. We couldn't stop her because whatever she was going back for, it was not expendable to her. It was not replaceable to her, and she would not leave it there with him, said Valladolid, who followed the woman to her home. We're just trying to make sure that she's safe and gets wherever she needs. At 10:16 p.m., a dispatcher called Watch Command to inform them of the current call load. They listed numerous significant calls that were holding and worked through a list, according to the statement. The Communications Center director refers to a call that occurred at 10:13 p.m., in which a mail party called back and changed the address. We do not have the call as a recording, the statement said. While they were at the woman's home, Valladolid said the woman's boyfriend returned but then agreed to leave for the night. The woman locked her doors and Valladolid, feeling she and her father had de-escalated the situation, headed to the police station at approximately 11:45 p.m. to file a complaint. After speaking with the sergeant for 20 minutes, Valladolid learned that an officer was being dispatched to the woman's house. The statement said an officer became available at 11:44 p.m. and was dispatched to an address on Ridge Avenue at 11:56 p.m. He arrived shortly after 12:30 a.m. after speaking with Valladolid and her father in the parking lot of Bob Rose Point After. By the time the department sent a car back out there, her boyfriend was already back there and their story had already changed. I'm sure out of fear, I feel how long it took the police department to respond and definitely responsible for the outcome, said Vala Lodeed, who was told by police that the woman declined to press charges against her boyfriend. Leaving an abuser is a process that doesn't just happen overnight, according to McGinty. She said it can take some time for an individual to even recognize that they're in an abusive relationship. McGinty said the most important thing members of the public can do to help someone who is experiencing domestic violence is to listen to them and offer support. She said they can also provide information about Safe Place, which has advocates who can help devise a safety plan to assist a survivor in making a move. Sometimes people don't realize the situation that they're in is abusive. They may kind of minimize what's going on, she said. Say they're not being physically abused, but it's more emotionally or mental. That's still abuse. A week after Vala Delolid addressed the city council, city manager Bob Padmore acknowledged that the police department's response time should have been better. They're looking at ways to improve on that, he said. There is a call-out box for this story, domestic violence by the numbers, and it says 20 people per minute are physically abused by an intimate partner in the United States. 1 in 4 women will experience domestic violence in their lifetime. 20,000 phone calls are placed to domestic violence hotlines nationwide on a typical day. 3 million children witness domestic violence, and that is from the SafePlaceSiouxland.org. Also, if you need help, Safe Place provides safety, advocacy, and support to empower adults and children who have experienced domestic violence. The organization's crisis line is 1-800-982-7233 and is staffed 24/7, and that's 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Or you can visit SafePlaceSiouxland.org for more information. A story from Brett Hayworth from the Sioux City Journal. The return of Taylor, GOP picks nominee for supervisor. 6 months ago, Jeremy Taylor gave up his extended battle to hold on to his Woodbury County Board of Supervisors seat. After some controversy over which of two homes constituted his legal address, on Tuesday he got the backing from county Republicans to go before voters in November in an attempt to get back on the county board in another of the 5 supervisor districts. Taylor was selected by acclamation by a special Republican county panel who met at Morningside Assembly of God Church to be party's nominee for a seat on the county board of supervisors. The district seat is held by Marty Potterbaum, a Democrat from Sioux City, who is running for re-election. I am grateful for the opportunity and your support. I will give you my all, Taylor said, adding that it was pleasing to receive the nomination in a church. No Republican filed for the primary election deadline late March for the County Board District 3 or County Auditor's position. However, Iowa election law says entrants can later get on the ballot, as county political parties have until August 26th to hold special conventions to name a nominee. The roughly 150 Republicans who served as delegates at the county conventions in March could have voted on the nominee at the meeting, which is technically known as a reconvened county convention, and 72 turned out Tuesday. Taylor said he had done well in his 5 years on the Board of Supervisors, with the property tax levy being decreased 5 times. We really increased the quality of good local government, he said. Taylor resigned his county supervisor District 2 seat on January 31st. That came 1 week after vowing to fight in court the decisions by the county's chief election official to cancel Taylor's voting registration over questions about his official address concerning a second home he owned in District 3, from which Taylor is now running. Taylor and his wife Kim own 2 homes, the one on Grandview that Taylor claimed as his legal residence and another at Christie Road, which the couple purchased in May 2019. A local citizen, Maria Runquist, in December filed a legal challenge to Taylor's voter registration, claiming the Christie Road home was his primary residence. Taylor, at a news conference, said Runquist was among those out to get him in a very partisan matter. After weighing various evidence and testimony at a January 23rd hearing, County Auditor Pat Gill found the preponderance of evidence established Taylor's voting residence as Christie Road. In his ruling, Gill found the preponderance of evidence, which included water bills and mortgage documents, established Taylor's voting residence as Christie Road and canceled his registration. Gill cited a copy of Taylor's mortgage for the Christie Road home, in which he agreed to maintain that property as his principal residence. Taylor was an unsuccessful candidate last month, coming in 3rd place in the Republican primary for the Iowa 4th Congressional District. Taylor cited winning his legislative post in 2010 and his supervisor terms in 2014 and 2018, but did not address his residency issues during his Tuesday remarks. Potterbaum said Tuesday, he had figured Taylor would run again for a seat on the county board, but found it telling that Taylor had sworn under oath that his residence was in District 2, but now he is running in District 3. I always expected more honesty from a chaplain, Potterbaum said. Three of the five county supervisor seats will go before voters in the November 3rd election. There will also be a county race for auditor, which has been held since 1997 by Gill, a Democrat. Also during the special convention, Tuesday, the Republican picked a nominee for the auditor's position, selecting Barb Parker, who is the city clerk of Salix. I have dedicated my entire career to public service, Parker said. The special convention process in Iowa is rarely used. The last time Republican Party conventions in Woodbury County were held to determine county supervisor nominees were in 2016 and 2004. As always, our online poll. Today's question is, how often do you plan to watch Major League Baseball games this season? Yesterday's poll was, would you have participated in rugby had it taken place this year? And 2% of the respondees said yes, and 98% said no. And there was a total of 47 votes. If you would like to speak out, today's question is, how, if at all, has COVID-19 affected your employment or that of someone in your family? And as always, if you would like to sound off, you can do it at www.facebook.com/Sioux City Journal. Gigaroa tapped to run against Hall. This is from Brett Hayworth out of Sioux City. State Representative Chris Hall, Democrat Sioux City, no longer has a clear path to re-election victory in November as local Republicans pick the nominee for the ballot. Meeting in a special panel on Tuesday, some members of the Woodbury County Republican Party Central Committee selected Ernie Gigaroa of the Sioux City to be on the ballot for Iowa House District 13. Gigaroa, 54, is the son of a lifelong Democrat, but in his adult life, he was attracted to the Republican Party and its principles. He is a U.S. Navy veteran and served in Iraq in the Iraq War. Gigaroa was injured on his way to Afghanistan and said it has been difficult getting the benefits he is entitled to from the Veterans Administration. Other Iowans have had similar problems, he said. I'd like to help make changes for the veterans and other people here too, Gigaroa said. This is Gigaroa's first run at elective office, and among those issues, he wants to work to raise the income of Iowans. No Republican filed by the primary election deadline in March for the District 13 position. However, Iowa election law says entrants can later get on the ballot as county political parties have until later in the summer to hold special conventions to name a nominee. Until Tuesday, in Iowa districts with Sioux City territory, two incumbents had no challengers, with Republican Jacob Bossman in District 6 and Hall in District 13. So far, Democrats have not held a session to select a nominee to take on Bossman. Hall was first elected to the House in 2010 and has won 5 terms. On the opinion page, we do have an opinion from the Sioux City Journal this morning. It says Trump joins ranks of face mask advocates. In a better late than never development on Monday, President Trump gave a boost to face mask used by tweeting an image of himself wearing one. More than 3 months after the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention recommended everyone wear a mask when they go out in public, no hoax. We are united in our efforts to defeat the invisible China virus, and many people say that it is patriotic to wear a face mask when you can't socially distance, Trump tweeted. There is nobody more patriotic than me, your favorite president. In additional hopeful signs, the Trump administration acknowledges today's troubling realities in America's war against COVID-19. The Assistant Secretary of Health on Monday recognized the obvious fact. There is no question we are having a surge right now. And President Trump said on Monday he will make himself available for coronavirus questions at daily briefings again. We don't know if an epiphany or a political calculation led President Trump to endorse face masks in strong, visible fashion after months of, let's be honest, lukewarm support of them at best. But we welcome his change in attitude because he wields influence on the behavior of many Americans who take their cues from him. We are not defenseless against COVID-19, CDC Director Dr. Robert R. Redfield said in the Journal of the American Medical Association earlier this month. Cloth face coverings are one of the most powerful weapons we have to slow and stop the spread of the virus, particularly when used universally within a community setting. All Americans have a responsibility to protect themselves, their families, and their communities. That's a message President Trump should keep repeating loudly and clearly. to the extent his words and actions lead to more of us wearing protective face coverings, the safer all of us will be. And again, that's from the editorial board of the Sioux City Journal, which consists of Bruce Miller, editor, Michael Gores, editorial page editor, Dave Driesen, managing editor, news, and Tim Hines, chief photographer. The opinion editorials in this section represent the consensus view of the Sioux City Journal's editorial board. Opinions expressed in other voices, editorials, and in columns, letters to the editor, and cartoons do not necessarily reflect the views of the editorial board. Turning to our letters to the editor, our first letter is from Jerry Eden of Sioux City, and says, some things are simply bigger than politics. It is very difficult to think of a more demanding situation to be in as governor than this pandemic. There is a real need to keep politics out of it, and that is difficult. I know how dependent Iowa Governor Kim Reynolds is on the Republican Party and the leadership of President Trump for her future, so I understand the pressure she is under. The director of the CDC said last week we could get the pandemic under control within 4 to 6 weeks and be able to plan on solid footing, the reopening of schools and so many other businesses. He made it clear, just as it has been made clear in Europe and in states where they have been successful in mitigating the virus, what needs to be done. We can have this dragging out longer and longer in Iowa with more and more illnesses, more and more deaths, more and more people's lives being disrupted, and more businesses dependent upon more and more rescue funding from the government, and more uncertainty about the future and the governor's leadership. I believe the frustration we all feel is starting to come together with a growing understanding about the difference between those who took real action with mitigation of the virus and those who didn't, leading to a lack of mitigation. Reynolds still has time, but the window is closing. Will she go down as someone who stayed with President Trump, even when she knows, just as we do, he has failed the nation and its people in a way he has dealt with the pandemic? Or will the governor take the politics out of it and respond just as any of us would to our next door neighbor who needs our help but doesn't agree with our politics? Some things are simply bigger than politics. They simply are the right thing to do. And again, that's from Jerry Eden of Sioux City. Our next one is from Mark Solheim of Sioux City. He applauds the review of fireworks ordinance. I applaud the actions of the Sioux City Council and its decision to review the city's firework ordinances. Its acknowledgement that fireworks are a problem in Sioux City is very well received. The noise from fireworks has been getting worse and worse every year, which only means that the fireworks themselves are becoming more and more powerful. The explosions start weeks before they are supposed to and carry on long after they are supposed to stop. The terror these explosions inflict on our veterans with PTSD is enormous and something you cannot really fathom. The horrors they suffered through while deployed are relived with each explosion. The vivid memory of their buddies being torn apart by IEDs is revived. The fireworks being discharged in Sioux City are nearing commercial grade and are akin to artillery and mortars. Using an explosive charge to launch a shell or bomb which explodes when activated by a delay fuse. These are the sounds of war. No wonder they trigger reactions in those with PTSD. We are our veterans more than this. They have seen enough hell. They should be allowed to leave the horrors of war on the battlefield and come home to their families and to peace. Thank you, City Council. Well done. Again, that's from Mark Solheim of Sioux City. And if you would like to share your opinion, we welcome and encourage reader feedback. Letters to the editor must be no longer than 250 words and will be edited for length. Please include your name, hometown, and daytime telephone numbers for verification. Phone numbers will not be printed. We will not publish anonymous letters or open letters or letters to a third party. We will publish no more than 2 letters and 2 mini-editorials per writer a month. Letters, mini-editorials, and guest opinions may be published or distributed in print, electronic, or other form. The quote of the day is, life's a bit like mountaineering, never look down. And that's from Edmund Hillary, a New Zealand explorer. Turning over to the sports page, there's a little bit more sports this morning. I'm going to try to get through some of it for you, just because it's state playoffs and those things. And but of course, we will start with our Siouxland Athlete of the Week, Weber, a key piece for the Jays. Galen Catholic catcher Addison Weber waves for the ball during the 2019 state tournament against Collins Maxwell in Fort Dodge, Iowa, and there's a picture of her. Addison Weber from Galen Catholic is the Siouxland Athlete of the Week, and she's a catcher. So going to state, it says Bulldogs to state. The Lamar's High School softball team celebrates their 4-1 win over Sergeant Bluff Luton in the region championship on Tuesday in Sergeant Bluff. And Remsen St. Mary's returns to state tournament. The unbeaten and second-ranked Hawks clipped Newell Fonda 2-0 in a Class 1A sub-state final at Riverview Complex. The GPAC still plans on their fall season, according to Corey Westra, the commissioner for the GPAC. And in prep baseball, the Kingsley Pearson West Lion baseball teams both advanced to state. And West Lyon beat Unity Christian 3-0. And looks like Kingsley Pearson beat Logan Magnolia 9-5. And late Monday, Harlan beat Denison Schleswig 13-3 in 5 innings. And then in softball, the North High girls fell to Fort Dodge 12-0 in 4 innings. On late Monday, Newell Fonda beat Zyra EHK 10-0 in 5 innings. Those are some scores for baseball and softball as they gear up for the state championships coming up pretty soon. In sports briefs, Iowa's Jackson Crunk named to Outland list. The University of Iowa senior offensive lineman Alaric Jackson and Coy Crunk have been named to the 2020 Outland Trophy watch list. The trophy is presented to the nation's most outstanding interior lineman on offense or defense. Iowa is one of only 20 programs to have more than one student athlete on the 85 player watch list. Jackson, a 6'6", 320 pounds, started at left tackle in all 10 games he played in 2019, earning second team all Big Ten honors by Phil Steele and third team all Big Ten honors by Elite Coaches and Media. He missed 3 games due to injury. Earlier this summer, the Detroit, Michigan native was named to the Iowa's 2020 leadership group, a preseason third team All-American by Phil Steele and a preseason first team all-10 Big Ten selection by Steele and Anthem Sports. Crunk, who is 6'5", 315, joined the Iowa football program during the 2020 spring semester as a graduate transfer from Indiana. A native of Lafayette, Indiana, Crunk started the first 4 games of last season at left tackle before suffering a season-ending injury. He was a team captain for the Hoosiers and was also named to last season's Outland Trophy watch list. In Crunk's first 3 seasons at Indiana, he started 36 games at left tackle, including 13 his freshman year to set an Indiana true freshman record as an offensive lineman. The recipient of the 75th Outland Trophy will be announced in early December. Other sports briefs, USD recruits falls in match play. This is from Kearney, Nebraska. USD recruit Danica Badura was knocked out of the Nebraska women's match play title on Tuesday. Badura, the number 10 seed, was defeated by the number 2 seed, Haley Teeley, in the quarterfinals. Teeley went on to win over Badura 3-2. Teeley went on to lose to Katie Rugger by 3-1 in the semifinal. Rugi will take on Hannah Hunke, who won her semifinals 3-2 for the match play title on Wednesday. Iowa's Guzik Pitcher of the Week. Iowa State, Iowa. University of Iowa redshirt sophomore Jack Guzik was named the Midwest Collegiate League Pitcher of the Week. The Northwest Indiana Oilman right-hander pitched his way to the MCL honor when he allowed just 4 hits over 6 shutout innings in a July 15 start against Crestwood. He racked up 9 strikeouts without issuing a walk. Guzik has not allowed a run in 13 innings this season and has 17 strikeouts against 2 walks. The honor is the 3rd of Guzik's career as he earned the distinction twice during the 2019 season on June 3rd and June 17th. And you and I holding virtual TC's tailgate. The annual TC's tailgate is going virtual and will take place live on August 12th at 6:30 p.m. The live broadcast is free and available to Panther fans everywhere. Participants will receive a 20% discount and free shipping on orders over $100 from the UNI bookstore. Code will be emailed to you upon completing your registration. The program will include messages from UNI President Mark Nook and Director of Athletics David Harris. Participants will have the opportunity to hear from Ben Jacobson, men's basketball, Bobby Peterson, volleyball, Doug Schwab, wrestling, Tanya Warren, women's basketball, and Mark Farley, football. Those tuning in we'll also see a behind-the-scenes virtual tour of our men's basketball locker room, courtesy of Coach Ben Jacobs. Participants are able to send in questions for our head coaches by emailing them to psc@uni.edu prior to the event. Fans can access the live event on unipanthers.com, and that's unipanthers with an s.com, and the UNI Athletics Facebook page. You are listening to the reading of the Sioux City Journal for Wednesday, July 22nd on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Services for the Blind. Now let's turn to today's obituaries. Edgar J. Denbisty of Sioux City. Edgar J. Ed Denbisty, 66, of Sioux City, passed away Friday, July 17, 2020. Private services will be held. Visitation was Tuesday at Meyer Brothers Colonial Chapel. Online condolences may be directed to MeyerBrothers.com. In lieu of flowers, memorials may be directed to Trinity Lutheran Church. Clifford Van Shapen of Hull, Iowa, 81, died Monday, July 20th, 2020. Services will be July 23rd at 4 p.m. First Reformed Church in Hull. Burial, Hope Cemetery in Hull. Visitation, July 23rd from 6 to 7 p.m. at the church. Ullman Funeral Home of Hull. Stephen Brown of Sioux City, 31, died Saturday, July 18th, 2020. Services, July 25th, 10 a.m. New Life in Christ Church. Sioux City Burial, Dakota City Cemetery. Visitation, July 24th, 4 to 8 p.m. Waterbury Funeral Services at Sioux City. Karen M. Tague of Sioux City, 64, died Friday, March 13, 2020. Celebration of life, July 25th at 2 p.m. Meyer Brothers Morningside Chapel. Visitation will be July 25th, 1 hour prior to the services at the funeral home. Kristen M. Gensler of Allen, Nebraska, 61, died April 19, 2020. Services will be July 25th at 11 a.m. at the United Methodist Church in Allen. Visitation July 25th, 1 hour prior to service at the church. Hassman Funeral Home of Wayne, Nebraska. LaVon Alice Bonnie Sales Teetstort of Battle Creek, Iowa, 90, died Sunday, July 19, 2020. Services will be July 24th at 10:30 a.m. at the First Presbyterian Church, Battle Creek. Burial will be at Mount Hope Cemetery, Battle Creek. Visitation, July 23rd, 6 to 8 p.m. at the church. Social distancing rules will apply. Christensen Van Houten Funeral Home in Battle Creek. Margaret L. Herbo of Mobile, Iowa, 99, died Sunday, July 19, 2020. Celebration of life, July 24, 20 at 10:30 a.m. First Lutheran Church, Kingsley, Iowa. A private family burial at the Arlington Township Cemetery in Mobile. Visitation will be July 24th at 9:30 a.m. to service time at the church. Johnson Ernest Funeral Home of Kingsley, Iowa, handling those services. Regina Ray Klein of Sioux City. Regina Ray Klein, 78, of Sioux City, passed away July 15, 2020. Services will be 9 a.m. Saturday at Calvary Lutheran Church with Pastor James Travis officiating. Burial will be in Memorial Park Cemetery. Visitation will be 4 to 7 p.m. Friday with a private family prayer service at 7 p.m. all at the church. Services will be live streamed on Calvary Lutheran's website, and may be listened to in the parking lot on 106.1 FM on the radio. Meyer Brothers Morningside Chapel is handling the arrangements. Online condolences may be made to www.meyerbrotherschapel.com. Memorials may be made to Calvary Lutheran Church. Richard J. Bathurst of Sioux City. Richard J. Dick Bathurst, 79, longtime resident of Sioux City, died peacefully at a Sioux City hospital on July 20, 2020, of complications from Alzheimer's. Due to the current COVID pandemic, the family will conduct a private burial service. Meyer Brothers Colonial Chapels is handling arrangements. Online condolences may be directed to www.meyerbrotherschapels.com. The family asks that cards and memorials be sent to Meyer Brothers Colonial Chapel, 3220 Stone Park Boulevard, Sioux City, Iowa, 51104, to be forwarded to them. Leonard Jamerson of Sioux City. Leonard Jamerson, 78, of Sioux City, passed away Monday, July 6, 2020. A private family service was held at the Meyer Brothers Colonial Chapel. Burial was in Logan Park Cemetery. Milton True Brainerd Jr., formerly of Sioux City, Milton True Brainerd Jr., 78, formerly of Sioux City, passed away Monday, July 20th, 2020, in Woodbury, Minnesota. Services will be 10:30 a.m. Thursday at Holy Cross Blessed Sacrament Catholic Church. Burial will be in Calvary Cemetery. Visitation will be 4 to 8 p.m. today, with the family present 6 to 8 p.m. and a vigil service at 7 p.m. at Meyer Brothers Colonial Chapel. Online condolences may be given at www.meyerbroschapels.com. And that's www.meyerbroschapels.com. Gladys Hedquist of South Sioux City, 98, died Saturday, February 29, 2020. Celebration of life, July 25th, 11 a.m. at the Moore and Becker Hunt Funeral Home, South Sioux City. Burial will be July 25th at 9 a.m. prior to service, Dakota City Cemetery. Visitation July 25th at 10 a.m. at the funeral home. Donald D. Jorgensen of Sioux City, 64, died Wednesday, July 15, 2020. Visitation July 23rd, 5 to 7 p.m., Meyer Brothers Colonial Chapel. Burial to be held at a later date. Darlene M. Moss of Sioux City, 71, died Monday, July 20th, 2020. Services July 24, 10:30 a.m. Morningside Lutheran Church, private family burial, Memorial Park Cemetery. Visitation July 24th, 1 hour prior to service at the church, Meyer Brothers Morningside Chapel. Margaret Josephine Schobauer of Sioux City, 79, died Friday, July 17, 2020. Memorial services will be July 24th at 11 a.m., Morningside Chapel, Christy Smith Funeral Home. Burial is July 25th at 1 p.m. at the Mount Hope Cemetery, Woodlake, Nebraska. Visitation July 24th, 1 hour prior to service. Laura Baker of Kingsley, Iowa, 88, died Monday, July 20th, 2020. Memorial service to be held at a later date. Rhody Funeral Home of Kingsley will be handling those arrangements. Gary L. Hoffdale of Dakota Dunes. Gary L. Hoffdale, 83, of Dakota Dunes, passed away on Friday, May 15, 2020, at his home with his family after a long illness. A celebration of life service will be 6 p.m. Saturday at the Dakota Dunes Country Club. Visitation with the family will be 4 to 7 p.m. Saturday, a brief service will be conducted by Meyer Brothers. Online condolences may be sent to www.meyerbrotherschapels.com. John H. Johnson of Sioux City. John H. Johnson, 93, of Sioux City, passed away Sunday, May 3rd, 2020, at a local care facility. Memorial services will be at 11 a.m. Saturday, July 25th, at St. John Lutheran Church in Sioux City, with Pastor Jeff Swanson officiating. Interment will be in Memorial Park Cemetery. Visitation with the family present will be 10:30 a.m. Saturday. Arrangements are under the direction of Meyer Brothers Colonial Chapel. Online condolences may be directed to meyerbrotherschapels.com. Memorials may be made in his name to St. John's Lutheran Church. And that concludes our obituaries for today, July 22nd. Looking at other local news today, we have some briefs. Center starting COVID-19 precautions, Yankton, South Dakota. The U.S. Army Corps of Engineers Lewis and Clark Visitor Center at Gavin's Point Project has implemented several COVID-19 safety precautions that have been implemented by the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. Visitors will now be required to wear a mask and remain 6 feet apart from one another. In addition, building occupancy will be limited to 37 people, and some displays have been removed or closed. Power plant tours have been discontinued for the remainder of the year. In keeping with the CDC guidance, visitors with a fever, shortness of breath, a cough, or other COVID-19 symptoms are asked to stay home. People with questions may call the Lewis and Clark Visitor Center at 402-667-2546 or check out their Facebook page, facebook.com/USACE-Gavins. Man pleads not guilty to sex abuse, and this is in Storm Lake, Iowa. A Storm Lake man has pleaded not guilty to repeated sexual assaults of a juvenile. Mario Del Paz, 36, entered his written plea Monday in Buena Vista County District Court to three counts each of third-degree sexual abuse and incest, and 2 counts each of administering harmful substances and lascivious conduct with a minor. According to court documents, Dalla Paz forcibly had sex with the victim at a lakeside home sometime around December 25th and on more than one occasion from January 1 through April 10th in a bedroom closet in a Storm Lake home. Dalla Paz forced the victim to sniff a white powder, which impaired the victim, court documents said. The Storm Lake Police Department initiated an investigation on May 12th after receiving a report about the incidents. Dalla Paz was arrested May 29th. Man killed in a grain bin accident, Lamar's, Iowa. A 65-year-old man was killed in a grain bin accident Tuesday morning, according to the Plymouth County Sheriff's Office. At 9:50 a.m., authorities received an emergency call of a man trapped in a grain bin approximately 5 miles east of Lamar's. Lamar's and Remsen Fire and Rescue and Lamar's and Remsen Ambulance were all dispatched to the location. Upon arrival, deputies learned that the man had been inside the grain bin loosening stuck corn. He had safety measures in place, but was still pulled into the corn when the crust broke. Rescue operations were unsuccessful, and the man's body was recovered at 10:50 a.m. The Iowa State Patrol and the Plymouth County Medical Examiner's Office assisted in the scene. The man's name is not being released pending family notification. Over in the business section, we have a story from Dave Driesen out of Sioux City from the Sioux City Journal. Unemployment again falls in Metro Sioux City amid COVID-19 pandemic. Unemployment in Metro Sioux City dropped to 7.4% in June as more local employers recall workers laid off due to the novel coronavirus pandemic. In April, the Metro jobless rate skyrocketed to a record 9.3% as governors in the three states imposed emergency measures that temporarily shuttered restaurants, bars, stores, and some other businesses. Unemployment in Sioux City, MSA, defined today as Woodbury and Plymouth County in Iowa and Dakota and Dixon counties in Nebraska and Union County in South Dakota, surged from 3.6% in March as the region lost 7,700 jobs, according to Iowa workforce development data. In state records dating to 1990, the April rate was the highest monthly jobless rate for the metro area, exceeding the previous high of 6.7% in December 2010. By this May, the percentage of metro residents without employment fell slightly to 8.7%. In June, the metro area gained 1,600 jobs, with retail trade displaying the greatest rebound from the previous month, adding 500 jobs. Leisure and hospitality added 300 jobs, regaining a small fraction of the 3,700 jobs lost between March and April. The small gain reflects the reluctance of some eating and drinking establishments to reopen while COVID-19 cases continue to mount, as well as some of their customers' reluctance to patronize the establishments while social distancing guidelines are still in effect. According to a statement from Iowa Workforce, overall employment remains 3,000 jobs below the March level. Every sector except government, minus 200, and professional and business services unchanged added jobs from May to June. Metro employment is still down 4,900 jobs from the same month last year, with jobs in leisure and hospitality minus 3,300 representing 67.3% of the total. Local government remains down 1,700 jobs from June 2019 and will likely see little gain until at least the new school year begins. Many municipalities have opted to avoid large gatherings by canceling many organized activities and not opening popular summer venues such as pools that normally would require additional employees. Manufacturing employment is just 200 below 1 year ago compared to other. That sector fared quite well through the pandemic, trimming just 3.89% of employment from March to April. Sioux City's unemployment rate for June was slightly better than the statewide average of 8%. Three other large Iowa cities had higher rates: Cedar Rapids 9.2, Des Moines 8.8, and Waterloo Cedar Falls 8.3, while Iowa City had a lower rate of 7.2%. The ranks of the unemployed also continued to steadily fall elsewhere in Northwest Iowa in June. Lyon County again had the lowest rate of 3.2%, down from 4.1 in May, In Dickinson County, home to the Iowa Great Lakes region, the jobless rate fell from 9.8% in May to 7% in June as resorts and other seasonal businesses open for the summer. And that is some good news. If you are celebrating a birthday today, we want to make sure we get that in there for you. Your horoscope today says, when opportunity knocks, open the door. It's up to you to accept an offer and to give your all. An energetic approach to life, love, and happiness will help you initiate the changes you want to make. Intelligence and passion will lead to a better future. Embrace change. Again, happy birthday to you. If you are celebrating a birthday today, some folks that are celebrating with you and have celebrated with you is Emma Lazarus Port, Edward Hopper artist, Oscar De La Renta, a fashion designer, turned stamp and actor, Alex Trebek, is celebrating today. George Clinton, musician. Ron Tocchetti, the racehorse jockey. Danny Glover, actor. Albert Brooks, also an actor. Don Henley, singer-songwriter. William Dafoe, actor. Rufus Wainwright, singer-songwriter. Selena Gomez, actress. And Prince George of Cambridge are all celebrating birthdays with you today. So once again, happy birthday. A couple of other stories from around the world, as our time comes. White House wants to keep base names out of Washington. The White House threatened to veto a massive defense policy bill over a provision that would rename military bases such as Fort Bragg that are named after Confederate officers. The veto threat Tuesday came hours before the House approved the $741 billion annual defense authorization, a sprawling bipartisan bill that includes a 3% pay raise for U.S. troops. The 295 to 125 votes sends the bill to the Senate, where lawmakers are considering a similar measure. The White House said it supported the overall spending figure, but issued a 13-page statement expressing serious concerns about multiple provisions in the bill, including the renaming of some military institutions and limitations on the use of funds for Afghanistan that the White House said would constrain the president's authority. EU agrees on a $2.1 trillion deal. After 4 days and nights of wrangling, exhausted European Union leaders finally clinched a deal on an unprecedented $2.1 trillion budget and coronavirus recovery fund early Tuesday. After one of their longest summits ever, the 27 leaders grudgingly committed to a costly, massive aid package for those hit hardest by COVID-19, which has already killed 135 people alone. With mask and hygienic gel everywhere at the summit, the leaders were constantly reminded of the potent medical and economic threat the virus poses. To confront the biggest recession in its history, the EU will establish a 750 billion euro coronavirus fund, partly based on common borrowing, to be sent as loans and grants to the hardest hit countries. That is in addition to the agreement on the 7-year, 1 trillion euro EU budget that leaders had been haggling over for months, even before the pandemic. And briefly, Federal Reserve. The Senate Banking Committee on Tuesday approved President Donald Trump's choice of Judy Shelton for the Federal Reserve Board of Governors on a party line vote, overcoming widespread questions about her qualifications. Clean water. Attorney generals in 20 states and the District of Columbia sued the Trump administration on Tuesday, alleging that new federal rules undermine their ability to protect rivers, lakes, and streams within their borders. Election 2020. President Donald Trump is set to be officially renominated in a shrunken Republican convention next month that's been truncated to 4 hours in Charlotte, North Carolina, before the GOP show moves on to Florida. Investigation. The powerful Republican Speaker of the Iowa House and four associates were arrested Tuesday in a $60 million federal bribery case connected to a taxpayer-funded bailout of Ohio's two nuclear power plants, hours before FBI agents raided Speaker Larry Householder's farm. U.S. Attorney David DeValliers described the ploy as likely the largest bribery and money laundering scheme ever been perpetrated against the people of the state of Ohio. South Korea. The Pentagon is considering adjustments to its military presence in South Korea and around the globe as it shifts from countering insurgencies in the Middle East to focusing on China, Defense Secretary Mark Esper said Tuesday. Venezuela. The Trump administration offered a $5 million reward Tuesday for information leading to the arrest of the head of Venezuela's high court, accusing the judge of taking bribes. U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo said Supreme Tribunal of Justice President Michel Moreno, a close political ally of Socialist President Nicolas Maduro, actively participated in transnational organized. Well, one last look at our weather for you. Again, today, a high of 81. Tonight, a low of 67. Thursday, a high of 86 with a low of 73, a couple of showers and thunderstorms. On Friday, a high of 91, a thunderstorm in spots in the morning, and then we round the night out with 74 degrees. On Saturday, mostly sunny, breezy, and humid for a high of 93 and a low of 74. The winds are out of the south at 10 to 20 miles per hour. And Sunday, rounding out the week, we have warm and humid with clouds and sun. A high of 92 for a low and a low of 70. Winds are out of the south-southwest at 8 to 16 miles per hour. Well, that concludes the reading for today, which is July 22nd, 2020. I am your volunteer reader, Ike Rayford. You can access a recording of today's reading on our website, iowaradioreading.org, anytime. Thank you for listening and have a great day.
People's Pharmacy Health Headlines. With half a dozen measles outbreaks currently underway in the U.S., as well as several serious international outbreaks, the news on measles vaccine from Denmark is important. Researchers conducted a nationwide study that included everyone born between 1999 and 2010. With more than 650,000 children in that group, they had more than 5 million person-years of follow-up. The Danish health system keeps excellent records on all of its citizens, including the children. Consequently, the scientists are confident that the 6,517 children diagnosed with autism during the study period are all the children who developed this condition. Children who did not receive the measles, mumps, rubella vaccine, or MMR, were equally likely as vaccinated children to develop autism. The investigators conclude, the study strongly supports that MMR vaccination does not increase the risk for autism, does not trigger autism in susceptible children, and is not associated with clustering of autism cases after vaccination.
The Food and Drug Administration has just approved a completely new type of antidepressant. The nasal spray, called esketamine, is expected to help people who have not responded to standard antidepressants. It will be marketed under the brand name Spravato. This drug is chemically related to the injectable anesthetic ketamine that's been on the market since 1970 and is available generically. Although esketamine is administered as a nasal spray, people will not be permitted to purchase it for home use. They will need to use Spravato under medical supervision at a clinic or doctor's office. Some experts have challenged the FDA's approval process for esketamine. While two clinical trials demonstrated some benefit, two others did not show that esketamine is better than placebo. Side effects of this novel antidepressant include nausea, dizziness, headache, and a feeling of dissociation.
FDA Commissioner Dr. Scott Gottlieb unexpectedly announced his departure from the agency this week. Experts were puzzled by his announcement since he has received high marks from the administration, industry, and even some consumer groups. Dr. Gottlieb has raised questions about teen vaping and has been an outspoken critic of pharmacy chains that sell tobacco products to minors. Some commentators speculate that these stances might be related to his abrupt departure. His explanation for the sudden departure is that he wants to spend more time with his wife and young children. Dr. Gottlieb is a survivor of Hodgkin's lymphoma.
Another week, another drug recall. Many lots of ARB blood pressure drugs, including losartan, valsartan, and irbesartan, have been recalled over the past 8 months. These medicines were contaminated with potential carcinogens known as NDMA and NDEA. Now, Hetero Labs has recalled 87 lots, and Tarrant Pharmaceuticals Limited is recalling 100 lots of losartan tablets. These pills contain an entirely new contaminant just identified as NMBA. It, too, is a suspected carcinogen. All three of these nitrosamine contaminants are apparently created as a result of the manufacturing process. FDA Commissioner Gottlieb stated, "We're making important strides at understanding how these impurities form, and we're continuing to examine if nitrosamine impurities may also arise during the manufacture of other ARB drug products. The FDA is committed to implementing measures to prevent the formation of these impurities during drug manufacturing processes in the future."
Cocoa flavonoids may have some benefit for people with multiple sclerosis, according to a small study. Previous research showed that dark chocolate rich in cocoa compounds might improve symptoms of chronic fatigue. The investigators recruited 40 people with relapsing remitting MS to drink cocoa every day for 6 weeks. 19 of them got high flavonoid cocoa, while 21 drank low flavonoid cocoa. At the end of the study, those on the high flavonoid cocoa had slightly less fatigue and could walk somewhat farther in 6 minutes than they had at the outset. They also reported less pain. And that's the health news from the People's Pharmacy this week.